So I found this hymn number 4 by Max Kapp, that ends with the phrase, the asking years. And it made me curious, what are these asking years, I wondered. I mentioned Reverend Kapp last week, if you may recall. He was originally a Universalist minister and then a Unitarian Universalist, active in the early post-merger days. His poem was put to music by organist and composer Alec Whiten and chosen for our gray hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition. And I was drawn to that phrase, the asking years. Somehow it felt like a phrase that must have come from somewhere else. We see words in poems and pieces of literature and we think, where else has that been? So I Googled it, of course. And I came across a book by Zora Neale Hurston called Their Eyes Were Watching God, which may be more familiar to some of you than it was to me. If I were a better literary scholar, I might have been familiar with this 1937 novel written by an African-American woman and set in agrarian West Florida. Chapter 3 begins, "There are years that ask questions and years that answer." Isn't that a great turn of phrase? There are years that ask questions and years that answer. It made me wonder, and I wonder if it calls you to question as well. When were the years for you that may have been asking years? And have there been ones that answered? I wondered if Max Kapp had read the book. This book had a renaissance in the 60s and is now considered a seminal work in both African American literature and women's literature. It chronicles a young Black woman's journey to self-awareness and identity. Maybe Reverend Kapp found a parallel for our tradition, engaged in its own journey for self-awareness and identity. We are people in search, right? In the realm of spiritual journey, we live still the asking years. I love the imagery from Kapp's reading earlier on gratitude, how he finds himself wanting to say, thank you. Dear earth, I say, and then I pause to look once more. Soon I am bemused and far away in wonder. The idea, I think, that we get stuck in this delicious place of wonder and question. And so I never get beyond, dear earth, he tells us. I get lost as well sometimes in this tradition of asking. I get bemused in wonder that it exists. In still these asking years, I question myself, are the questions the same? I think it's likely they are. The questions we ask in faith community, why are we here? Is there a purpose to our living? Do we have souls? What is death? Will anyone remember me? And has my life made a difference? These questions, I think, haven't changed so much. But in still these asking years, I wonder, are the answers any different? And I think perhaps they are. Culture does not stand still. And when everything around us moves, like science and technology, like what we know about our brains, how we are impacting the very earth that provides us life, what transportation we use, what foods we eat, what foods we grow, the myriad is infinite. When the information around all those things changes, our answers change as well because our relationships to all those things are different. What we know about the world and how it informs our decisions changes our perspectives, even our spiritual perspectives. The balance that we talked about in our story this morning between focus on the oil and focus on the world around us determines how we understand our place in all of it. How can our understanding and thus our answers not evolve? Faith evolves, And it is a tenet of this tradition that revelation is not sealed. We are seekers, constantly moving forward. And it's possible, it's just possible, that the world may be catching up with us. What do you think? Harvey Cox is a former Harvard professor, highly regarded theologian and author of countless books, published in 2009 one called The Future of Faith. Never one to shy away from big challenges, because I wonder how many of us would take on the idea of writing a book about the future of faith. Cox suggests a contemporary trend away from hierarchical, regional, patriarchal, and institutional religions. He identifies as a Christian and writes within the context of the Christian story, but his message reaches beyond that tradition alone. He tackles the idea that fundamentalism is on graphic display around the globe because it is dying. We read that and feel almost aghast. We see this challenge between fundamental religion of whatever kind, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, the challenge between those entities and modernity all over the place, in the Middle East, in African countries, in our own political system. When the pace of change increases, the pushback increases as well. It's like the force of water on stone. Imagine a gentle stream and the splash is small. And when it's stronger and more forceful, the splash is more dramatic. The increased pace of change that we are experiencing in this century is challenging traditional religion more forcefully, so the pushback is stronger. I think Cox's ideas are relevant to our Unitarian Universalist future. So I want to briefly outline his thinking in order to consider the direction that our own tradition may be moving and what opportunities it may provide for this congregation and what it might mean for each of you individually. Now, we need to get just a little academic here with his analysis. He suggests there are three eras in the life of the Christian church. The first 350 some odd years of Christianity, so from the death of Christ until the beginning of Trinitarianism, he refers to as the age of faith, when people followed the teachings of Jesus before the existence of the church as we have come to know it. Recall that Unitarian Universalism comes out of this tradition. It's the parent we grew from. It's important to consider that trajectory. The first 350 years, the age of faith. The second era he calls the age of belief, which lasted around 1600 years, a big chunk of time. The church and its leaders became controlling interests in doctrine, in practice, and in the definition of what was expected and/or acceptable in religious environments. The church set the parameters of right and wrong in Christian construct, not the practitioners. So we have the age of faith in the beginning. We have a long stretch, the age of belief. The last 50 years, he contends, which are coincident with the existence of Unitarian Universalism as a merged tradition, welcome in what he calls the age of the Spirit, in which he maintains that Christians had begun to ignore dogma and embrace spirituality while finding common threads with other religions. Faith is resurgent, he claims, while dogma is dying. The inclination to look for meaning and answers in our lives, to approach our living with a particular perspective, or what he calls confidence, which is how he defines faith, interestingly. He says this faith has resurged, this confidence. He's not suggesting that we're no longer concerned with matters of the spirit, but that the rules that have framed spiritual life for many hundreds of years are no longer relevant in the same way. People are finding different answers to those age-old questions. And I think this is good news for us. If he's right, then these contemporary asking years present both some really interesting challenges and some really interesting opportunities. So let's look first quickly at the challenges. We know from various studies that affiliation with faith communities has been dropping. That's been happening for a while now, and it appears to be a more reliable pattern for our younger generations. It used to be that Sunday morning soccer and the New York Times were the driving distractions from being in church on Sunday morning. Probably none of you have used those excuses before, but you never know. Now we find that our young adults, which he calls millennials, are, according to a recent Pew Forum, have an overall detachment from institutions. So not only are people not looking to churches in the traditional sense for answers, younger folks are not engaging in congregational life in the same way that previous generations have. According to Carrie McDonald, who is the director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministries for the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, we aren't truly reaching the millennial generation because we haven't figured out how to take the things we love about our churches, which are inviting those theological questions and supporting liberal social justice issues, and translate them into an approach that makes sense for young adults. McDonald is challenging us to create sustainable spiritual organizations in this brave new world of non-institutionalism. So in this age of the Spirit, it's not that we're no longer in the asking years, it's that the way we go about creating community has to stretch if we want our faith to continue to be a beacon of conscience, connection, and meaning for decades to come. That is a healthy challenge for anyone interested in congregational life. When I was in my early 20s, maybe comparable to where the millennials are now, I had a newborn baby girl. And I was visiting my parents in Honolulu. We had gone out to dinner at a neighbor's house. And I was chatting with the hostess, who was the parent of friends I had known since high school. At one point in our conversation, she said to me, "Well, Anne, what are your short and long-term goals?" So we're like, chat, chat, chat. "What are your short and long-term goals?" Stop chat. Ever since that conversation, I've remembered that her children, even then, were really directed, successful people. And they have become even more so, at least in financial terms. So it shouldn't have surprised me that she was asking this question, but frankly, no one, not any one of my teachers, not my parents, not my brothers, not any of my friends, had ever asked me explicitly about my short and long-term goals. So it took me by surprise. I'd been married the year before, I had had a child recently, and I didn't have a list. Maybe get the baby to sleep at a reasonable hour. That's a nice short term. Have a nice vacation with my family. That's a little longer. So fast forward 20 years or so. I was in the locker room with a group of women that I swim with in a master's program. Now, to be in a master's program, they might be a little type A already. But just out of curiosity, I asked the group, because, of course, I was still stuck on this 20 years later, "How many of you have short and long-term goals?" And one of them pipes up with, "Personal or professional?" Wow. And then she said, "I make mine for 6 months periods of time, and I check them every 3 months just to make sure I'm on task." I was both impressed and a little concerned. There's a tension we hold between the present and the future. And when we're so busy looking forward, measuring ourselves against what we set for ourselves as those benchmarks, we may risk being joyfully here in the present, soaking up every moment of now, which is, in truth, the only place we really exist. But then if we don't take the time to look forward, to plan our paths, we risk a kind of treading water, staying afloat maybe, but not moving forward with any particular direction. We have new challenges in faith community, I think, as well as opportunity. Peter Mayer's song that Michael shared with us so well says it succinctly, I think. Everything is holy now. We know that. We breathe that. Whatever source feeds your heart, your mind, your body, your spirit, we know every day is a gift. Just as Billy Collins reminded us, mysteriously placed in your waking hand or set upon your forehead moments before you open your eyes. It's not just about Sunday morning holy anymore. So now we have to figure out how to create the structure that will allow us to live that message all day, every day, together. For those of us who love Sunday mornings, the service, the pause, the music, the coffee hour, the gathering, the vibrancy of that tradition, and I count myself strongly in that cohort, there should be no fear of losing that. I hope Sunday morning is here to stay far beyond my lifetime. We need Sabbath, and we need Sabbath in community. And we also have to be prepared to bring our most imaginative, creative, out-of-the-box thinking to how we will sustain and grow our beloved communities, because we're still asking questions. This is a new age, as Harvey Cox suggests. I wonder if any of you remember the Chinese admonition, "May you live in interesting times." And indeed, we do. I've been hearing more of your story this week. What it is you all love about this community. Those of you who have been here 30 years and more, those of you who have discovered its welcome just this year or just these last few months, perhaps. You have pulled yourselves back from the brink over the last three decades. Major, major kudos to you all. Whether you've been here through the thick and thin of it, arrived just within this last year, or anywhere in between, here you are, legacy to this 300 years of amazing tradition. This beautiful space holds your dreams in ways that will enliven and energize and make the spirit bubble from within and between and among us, we Unitarian Universalists, each of us, and all of us together, have the opportunity to sustain the safety and joy of communities of seekers. For these are and always will be, even with the occasional glimmer of an answer, these will be still the asking years. And so may it always be. Can I get an amen to that?
Amen.
Yes, good job.